Welcome back to the Stronger Business Podcast, where the dadpreneur himself, Alex Oliveira, is discussing with us today how to traffic more leads to your website and in turn generate more revenue for your business. And with that, I will turn it over to our hosts, Josh Melton and Chad Brown.
Hey, hey, entrepreneurs and business owners. Welcome to today's episode of the Stronger Business Podcast. We got a special guest today. If you're interested in increasing revenue through lead generation and growing customers and harnessing the value of existing customers to live a life of freedom, today is going to be the episode you want to listen to. We got an amazing guest, Alex Oliveira. Welcome to the podcast, man.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Chad and Josh.
What I love about this, Alex, from the very start of this, is I thought, Chad, when you were starting the episode, I thought he was doing his best Fat Albert impersonation. Hey. You cut it to two Hayes. Must have been a copyright type of
thing. That's right. Yeah, I don't want to get in any trouble there. I mean, if you're signing up for a podcast full of awesome information going a lot of different directions, you're in luck today, because that is what we're going to do. We all have a problem being an entrepreneur, chasing shiny objects, owning multiple businesses. I think I made the comment before this all started, it probably doesn't matter how big or how successful our main business grows to. We're always going to have other stuff, other irons in the fire, because it's just who we are. So we'll talk about that a little bit today. But man, Alex, tell us a bit about just the beginnings of your story. Have you always been an entrepreneur? Is that the way it all started? How did you get this bug?
Yeah, the bug was definitely from a young age. Originally from Brazil, I came to the U.S. in 1988 when I was 10. And believe it or not, when I was 11 here in South Florida in Delray Beach, I got my first job as a busboy. So in those days, you could get a job at 11, right? Today, it would be like, no. And I had the coolest part of the job, by the way, that I thought, I'd leave school and go to this little restaurant, little Italian restaurant, and clock in. I thought clocking in was the best part of it. And, you know, I wore a bow tie. It was like a fine dining. And my dad got me the job there, you know. But again, typical immigrant story. We came here for a better life. My parents started their business. They grew to a multi-million dollar clothing company. And I grew up in that business, going to trade shows, arts and craft shows, flea markets. They had clients. And so I worked right from an early age and learned sales, which there's like no better skill that you can learn as an entrepreneur, like sales, rejection, how to build conversations and build rapport and all those things, right? Negotiate. I watched my mom negotiate quite a bit. But yeah, my mom had 13 brothers and sisters. Most of them are alive to this day, and most of them own their own businesses, some very successful. Wow. Multi-million dollar businesses. So grew up in that whole entrepreneurial world and then came to the US.
So you went from like clocking in is the greatest thing ever to I don't ever want to clock in again.
That's right. Well, yeah, I watched my parents, you know, make that distinction. Like, look, you don't like this, you don't like that. That doesn't matter because you're not the boss. You're not the one signing the check. So
I like
Alex, it. How old were your parents when they came to Florida?
They were in their 30s, early 30s. So imagine no English, no papers. Like, you know, when I think about what they had to deal with just to get on their feet here, I'm like, man, I have it really easy. I tell my kids too, we're already here, let's say third generation here. It's amazing. You know, I mean, this country, again, leaving the politics aside, it doesn't really matter, man. This country is amazing. There's no place like it. I've got family in other places around the globe. You can compare any other democracy to the U.S. And I know we all go back and forth here and wish things were better here and there. It's really, really amazing compared to any other country. So
your parents come here. They don't speak English. Were they entrepreneurial in Brazil, or did they come here and just see, hey, free enterprise system? We're just going to figure this thing out, start our own business. Like, what's a little bit of your parents' story there? So they started, you said, a clothing business and were able to scale that over time to be very successful.
I think that's a very important question right there, Josh, because as a matter of fact, immigrants, it's something like, I want to say, they create 80% of the small businesses. When I say small business, I mean solopreneurs, not small businesses, because right. there's a distinction there too, right? Like 85% of small businesses are actually solopreneurs, just one person or a 1099. So you got to read into the numbers. But the bottom line is the reason why immigrants start so many businesses as opposed to an American is because that's the only option, right? When you first come here, you might not have papers. You can't go work somewhere. So you have no options but to say, hey, I'm going to start a cleaning business, a construction business, you know, make my own clothes and sell it at the flea market. And these days you could sell stuff online. So that's truly why so many immigrants create jobs. And then you have the other more, the higher educated immigrants that come here, right? The ones that come on the work visa and work for the Googles and the Facebooks. Well, those guys do the same, right? They come with their PhDs. They work for a big company like that. And as soon as they get a little money, they jump out and start their own business. But that's really why, right? Because most of, like my kids, if they're, you know, they're born here, do you really need to go through that whole process of starting your own company if you have other options? Well, it's not as important for the American as it is for the immigrant. So I always like to highlight that because people wonder, well, why is it? Is it just that these foreign countries are, you know, the immigrants who are coming are all entrepreneurs? It's not. My parents, to answer your question, while family members were entrepreneurs, my mom and dad, they were not. So
they were just doing what it took to survive. Hey, we got to be scrappy. We start our own business. But as a result, you grow up in an entrepreneurial household.
Right.
And you get this phenomenal job with the bow tie and the clock in opportunity, which is everybody loves. But scale it up. By the way, just a side.
I wore that to school every day, by the way. This is great. Sorry, boys and girls. I can't go to recess. I got to go to work.
I got to clock in. Money. Y'all throw the football. I'm gonna go get some tips, baby. I think one of the things, again, this is a little bit of a side note here, but, you know, American schools, they just, as Robert Kiyosaki says, he's like, they're like employee farms. We just condition everybody to go get a job. And so while it is a great option, and I think that most people, I think everyone at some point should go get a job to understand what it's like. I think lots of people should get a job at my company, right? Y'all should all work here. But no, you know, we're kind of conditioned toward jobs.
I believe in the employee model under us.
Yeah, it's a great place to work. But so for you growing up, you see your parents doing this thing on their own. And so the bug's there. What was your career like? So did you start off getting other jobs or did you figure out pretty quick, I'm going to do my own thing?
Yeah, no, definitely. I stayed in the family business really until I was maybe about 16, 17. Interesting story. My mom was just over Mother's Day weekend reminding my son about my first car. So I get my first car when I'm 16 and her and my dad had just gotten divorced. And so she said, I twist her arm into letting me buy a brand new car, which she was like, what? No, like you're going to buy a beater. And I'm, you know, she's feeling guilty. I was terrible. I was manipulating her, right?
Sounds like you're good sales from day one, baby.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and that is the point of the story. She's like, he used to sell the crap out of me. And I just feel like, gosh, these kids are going through so much right now with a broken family that I guess I'll just let you do it. But anyways, but she did say to me this, she says, look, so you got your job. I had a job at the mall, a job selling papers door to doors. I had a bunch of little jobs, right? And still work for her on the weekends. She says, you're going to buy a car. I'm going to co-sign. Okay. I remember it was at SunTrust. She said, you will pay every single payment. I'm never going to help you. If you miss a payment, it's on you because maybe, you know, blew your money. You're going to pay for the insurance. You're going to pay for the gas, all that stuff. I'm like, all right, I'm 16. I'm thinking like, well, yeah, of course I will. But of course, at that age, you start, you know, dating. I blew my money on the girls, you know, girlfriends going out, whatnot. And this probably about, say, 6 months into owning that car, brand new car, I come to my mom and I said, listen, the payment is due, whatever it was, like on a Friday. And I don't have any money. Like I spend all my money, my paycheck, everything I made, like I have zero. And she says, I told you, like, I'm not going to rescue you, but if you ruin my credit, everything I worked for, we're going to have a problem. That car is going back and that's it. So, you know, when you're a teenager, when you're 16, that's like the end of the world. I'm like, oh no, what will I do now? So she said, look, here's what I'll let you do. I'll let you go to the warehouse, get some clothes on consignment. You're not going to have to buy the clothes, but you get it on consignment. And then you get your butt to the flea market, all right, on a Friday, because it's like $20 to get a little push cart. So you go to the flea market and you sell, usually you'd sell about $400 or $500 in a day, even in those days. And I said, okay, but like I'd have to cut school, right? Like you're putting me in a weird spot here. She says, well, that's, you're going to be in trouble for that too. And I'm going to take your car away. I said, what kind of crap is that, man? And I swear to this day, she was telling my kids a story. I said, but it's catch 22. Anyways, long story short, my girlfriend and I, we skip school. We go to the warehouse. We go to the flea market at like 6 a.m, get a push cart. Long story short, I get the money. At the end of that day on Friday, I go to SunTrust. I make the payment. Real story, like no deviation there, no exaggeration. Yeah, to me, it was one of those lessons about not overextending myself and sticking to my word, that I don't think all the lessons that I got in college or even in business would have given me that sort of real life experience, you know? And so that was huge for me right there.
I love the part of that where, and that, golly, we get into it so much as entrepreneurs and business owners. There is no great decision here. I got to pick the best of these two bad decisions. Like it, I can't really win, but how do I lose less, or how do I get out of the situation I'm in, knowing this decision here is going to derail this over here? And so that's my favorite part of that. I think that reflects a lot of what we do day to day as business owners, is juggling which of the bad decisions need to be made.
Yeah. And I think it wasn't the first time, by the way, you know, earlier that year, I never forget this one too. I take the girlfriend, we skip school, there's a lot of skipping school here. This is terrible for kids. I hope the kids are not listening.
Sounds like a terrible influence on this girlfriend of yours.
I know, man. And, or the other way around, probably, yeah, but no. Her. It's all her. But no, we skip school and we go to Bennigan's. You remember that restaurant, Bennigan's? Man, I was bawling. It's Bennigan's, right? So we skip.
Never went to Bennigan's before my 20s. So.
Oh, no, man. I was trying to impress her. So I would go to Bennigan's and I had a credit card, which clearly, if you're 16, you don't have a credit card. So fast forward later, my mom finds out that I lied about my age to get a credit card. At the age of 16, which this is really not going well, but
entrepreneur from the start.
Yeah, but
we toe that line of sometimes criminal, but that's,
yeah,
that's,
I'm telling you,
you weren't lying about your age. You had a creative narrative. That's all.
Man, that's creative financing. All the big guys do it, right? But no, but I think the credit line was $500. Wasn't much. Anyways, I went to the limit and had no more, but because my budgeting skills were horrible, we go to the restaurant, we finish eating. This is like middle of the day, and they go swipe the card and it's like, no, so embarrassing, right? So I'm already embarrassed. Like, oh, try it again. And you know, they're like, shh, shh, you know, trying that little, you know, it's, nope. Yeah. Credit card ain't going to work. I don't have enough cash. It's probably $30-$40, whatever it was, but I didn't have the cash. I kid you not, man. This is very shameful, but I had to go to the payphone, call my mom and ask her to come and pay. It was, I mean, like one of those, you know, stories that I think back to those days and I'm like, what the hell was wrong with me, man? Like so irresponsible. And of course that walk of shame, you know, walking out of the restaurant with the girlfriend, I got to drop her off home and then hear from my mom, like, this is shameful. You can't do these things. So, yeah.
We're laughing at your expense, but it's really funny. Good story. Good lessons. True. Thank you. You taught us a lesson just then, man. Really, I appreciate good. That.
I can just picture it so well.
Yeah, it really, I can't too. I saw you walking out, man. I really did. Like,
it's like top of the world ball and right to the end.
Oh, man, those fajitas cost me an arm and a leg, man. I'm telling you what.
So you're working in your parents' business. And then tell us about, like, when did you make the transition to being an entrepreneur completely on your own?
Yeah, completely on my own. I mean, I have to fast forward coming out of college. I took over their company for 3 years. So really around 2004 is when I said, okay, now I want to do my own thing. And I opened a construction business with my uncle. It was a good partnership. I've had many partnerships. You guys are partners, so you know what that's all about. And when I reflect on all my partnerships, they've all been great. I've had great lessons. Some of them I still have 10, 15 years down the road, but with my uncle out the chute, I really understood the power of marketing and spending the money and time and effort into building a sales team and then feeding it leads, Whereas he saw it more like, look, I don't want to grow this to $1 million business, because he was a craftsman, mm-hmm. right? So he was the construction side. I was the backside, the back end of the business. And I said, no, but we can really grow this because you make these cabinets and you remodel kitchens. The sky's the limit. We could flip homes. And he's just saying like, no, that's not what I want to do. So it was short lived, but I just said, you know what? I've already put all this work into this. I'm going to keep going. And so my wife, a couple of years later, 2005, joined the business, and we've been business partners ever since. And yeah, so that's really when I started my I'm on my own, 2004.
Now, was that business in the field of construction, or is that what just go into marketing?
No, in the field of construction. But again, because I knew nothing about construction, I relied on my uncle and on his installers and, you know, technicians. Like, I, when we split, what I had was a lot of leads, but not, I didn't understand. You walk onto a job site and here's a blueprint. This is how you do this, that, and the other. So I had to hire immediately people who had the experience on the field, because I certainly didn't, but I could generate a whole bolt of leads and train salespeople all day on how to, you know, just take that customer experience to the next level, which I never found very hard to do. You just looked around at competitors and say, man, these people are so unorganized and they don't know how to treat a customer like gold. Like, always give them a white glove service and they're going to be willing to pay more, you know?
Yeah. You take all your customers to Biddingen's, right?
No, I don't. If I do, man, I got to call my mom.
So at some point, it sounds like you transitioned from customer service and lead gen and the marketing side of construction into more of that being your main business model. Is that right?
That's right. I mean, from that time on, guys, what I saw was like, I could grow any business in any area. Doesn't matter what field I'm in. If I know how to drive traffic, and you know, this is like the beginning of digital, really. No, I wouldn't say the beginning. If you think about smartphone, really, it's 2005. If you think the internet is really 1995, then you have the dot-com bust bubble. But you know, for the first 10 years, a lot of SEOs and digital marketers, lead gen guys, they couldn't really figure out online. It's really when smartphones come about and Google Ads and YouTube. YouTube was launched in 2005. There's a lot of stuff that came out in 2005 and 2006 that if you were there at the beginning, like domaining, I used to have thousands of domains and flip domains. What I knew about any product or service that I get my hands on was I know how to do this stuff online. And it doesn't take, I mean, I remember buying a property in New Mexico that I still own to this day. I bought it on an auction in eBay in 2002. I want to say it was 2002. Sight unseen. We didn't go visit that property until 2010. And it's still sitting there as an investment. But early on, I really immersed myself in the online world and understood, like, I don't have to be an expert in the product or the service. I just need to know how to bring customers in.
And where you're different, and what we were talking about before we started the episode in some conversations, is you don't get wrapped up in the SEO, the AdWords, all the digital algorithms of social. You focus a little different on the lead gen side. And how do you do that? And what's different? And tell us a little bit about your specialization in that model.
Alex, I gotta jump in real quick though.
I told you, here we go.
Let me have a drink of water. Oh boy.
Yeah. Chad's all stressed today. He usually has this gigantic iced coffee from Starbucks. I'm not sure what happened today.
Oh, I heard he was gonna do this.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, every episode. It's like a sound effect. Like, we know really that's real. It's not a sound effect we add later.
Here's how you tell how my day's going. At 2 o'clock, if I don't have a Starbucks cup, it's been a rough, things did not go as scheduled or as planned.
Yeah.
Day has got derailed. If I am sitting here with a layman's cup of coffee from the little machine in there, it has been an interesting day.
I love this. He said layman's cup of coffee. He's got his peasant cup of coffee here today.
It gets the caffeine in my body, but it's not an enjoyable process like the Starbucks experience.
I'm sorry. Hey, Alex, I'm sorry, man. You're not getting a great customer service from Stronger Business today. You're getting ornery Chad instead of Starbucks ice caffeinated Chad.
But all entrepreneurs know, sometimes your day does not go as planned. My day has been the equivalent of that car not working at Bennigan's. Here we are.
Yeah, man, Alex, Chad called his mom and she didn't answer. So he didn't get bailed out at all. Mom, can you go to Starbucks for me? She didn't answer.
Oh, man. But my day's been so bad. My assistant couldn't even go get me Starbucks.
Wow.
That's how bad it's been.
So the point of connection before we get back to Chad's question is that you said you bought a piece of property sight unseen.
Yeah.
Off of a online auction. eBay, and I just wanted you to know, a man here.
Half the stuff I own, I never saw.
The property he lives on,
that's true.
He bought at it wasn't an online auction. It was a real live auction.
He was at a bar.
He was at a bar. There's drinks. And he bought a property at an auction, sight unseen. And that's his humble abode today. So you guys got a connection there.
Sweet, again,
he digitized
man.
It. He did it in real life. But
I will jump in and tell you one more story since we since we committed to not staying on topic today. That's a true story. I also own a house in Charleston, South Carolina that I bought sight unseen, much like you. It was a few pictures on the internet. We were driving back and like, oh, it'd be awesome to own a place here. Let's look online. And we found something and I called the bank that owned it. This was during the recession and made them some ridiculous offer. And they're like, we'll take it. Let's do it. And so fast forward, I call my banker and get it all set up and we get a loan for it and do the thing. And we're at the closing table. It was with Thomason. And we're like signing. He's like, man, it's awesome. He's like, this is exciting. I can't wait to see it. And I was like, me either. And everybody just stopped at the closing table. And his like other bank, like VP was there and stuff. And they just looked at me like, you hadn't seen it? I'm like, oh no, I don't even really know where it's at. And they all froze. And the whole like signing closing process stopped for a little bit.
Got a little awkward there for a second, didn't it? So, Alex, just to let you know, man, because at the beginning of this episode, maybe before the episode, I can't remember, you said Josh was the risk taker and Chad was the more like well thought out.
No,
it's the risk taking a share.
He's the risk taker. Yeah, yeah.
Just like you are buying the properties.
I will say, though, I never bought a property sight unseen and went years without going to check it out. No, you're on like you're on like another level.
Well, he says, we'll go see it before we die.
So my wife went out there 2009, a trip from here. We went through Texas, everywhere, all the way to Vegas. And we stopped in, it's just south of Albuquerque. And we said, okay, let's stop there, go to the Chamber of Commerce first. Cause you look at the plot maps, it was somewhere where it was coming up the suburbs, but there was no construction there yet. So we go there and they say, oh, this is how you get here and get there. Cause there's no street signs, but we finally get to the spot where the lot is sitting and there's all these like carcasses, just, you know, like it's the desert. And we're like, what? We're never going to build here. But anyways, fast forward to today, it's a huge community and we're sitting on the lot and we're always toying with the idea, you know, should we build, should we sell? But it's like every other investment. Sometimes you just let it sit there and do nothing and just keep moving on to the next thing. You know, I recently just came from Brazil about 2 months ago. Same situation, an opportunity came up to buy a property in a condo. And I say, hey, let's take a look at it. I went down there, made the deal, and it was done. And so, I mean, that it's going to be more for the family to go visit, but obviously it's an income generating property. You know, obviously everybody wants to have that income. And as Chad would say in his Instagram, you know, there's tons of tax benefits there as well. So
it sounds to me, Alex, like you're getting kind of soft though. That's, now that you have to go see the property see before it. You buy it.
The cost to fly to Brazil to look at something. Jeez. All right, boys, we can talk about real estate for hours. Alex, I need to know how to make some money. I need to know how to grow some revenue.
Yeah.
I need to know, and my audience needs to know how we drive customers and customers at higher price points. Teach us, my man.
Let's do it. So like there's really three ways if you think about it. And
right,
I'm not saying
I like
anything.
This. Three things.
But there's
I'm ready.
All these are things you already know. Everybody listening to this already knows. So you've got first option, which is the best option. Look within your customer network. Now, if you're a startup or you have no revenue in your business, you're screwed. You're going to have to go to option two. But if you have a revenue generating business and you have past customers, that's where you got to look. It's all your connections, all the networking that you've done, the people that trust you, the people that know you. That's where you go first. But you got to nurture those relationships. You know, sometimes people say, well, you know, listen, if you don't nurture relationships, go out to lunch with people, write them once in a while, call them just to call them. I'm sorry, when you turn to them because you have a new line of business ready to show the world, they're not going to help you, you know? So the first way to generate leads and revenue is those channel partnerships within your network and connections. And if you suck at networking and nurturing relationships, well, you're screwed there too, right? That's option one. Option two is going to be, well, let me go spend money on advertising. So Google ads, Facebook ads, influencer marketing, and all those channels. That's very good, except for if you're in one of the top 10 verticals out there, like insurance, automotive, finance, you're competing against the guys who can spend literally $1 million a day on ads for pay-per-click. So if you're like a local insurance agency, you're not competing with Geico. I mean, often it's the carrier you represent that is competing against you, and they're ready to spend $100 per click while you're like, hey, how about if I bid $2 per click? You're going to get nothing, right? So paid is good, but you don't own that because it's the algorithm that owns that. All these platforms are auction-based: Facebook, Google, Instagram, LinkedIn. Everything is auction-based. Whoever's the highest bidder, that's who the consumers and the users see. So option two is okay. And I certainly would say it's great for anybody to, you know, create some awareness for their brand, but it's not the route that I go either. The third one is the one that I prefer everybody work on, especially if they don't have option one. The third one is your own media. That is your website and your email marketing. And even think about communication. I know on your site, I was on your podcast website, guys, and you have a great communication tool for leads there. When you say subscribe to the, I think it's like the daily quotes, I go to that page. You guys give me like 2-3 different ways of communicating with you and being a lead for you. Now, when I say lead, I don't mean like transactional. Like by me subscribing to your daily text by scanning the QR code or texting you, which I didn't do yet, so take it easy. I'm going to do it. By you doing that, I'm becoming a lead within your network. Clearly, I'm interested in something if I give you my mobile number and now I'm interacting with you, engaging. Now, what you're going to have to figure out down the road is what kind of a lead am I? Am I a podcast listener? Am I a taking your course? What am I doing with you? And in many cases, it could just be it's a good business relationship. That's the fallacy with this whole digital world. Everything has to equal ROI. And that's not how it works. People want to have a great experience and know that you're the type of company, the type of brand that actually gives a shit about their needs, right? Their pain points. And if you illustrate that in that third option, which is building a bridge between you and your user, the lead, that is either your website, your email, or your mobile. Why do I say your website, your email? Those are really the only two communication channels that exist online with no friction. There's no friction. Think about it. If you come to my website, like if we end this podcast today and I said, hey, listeners of the Stronger Business Podcast, go to my LinkedIn page and connect with me. And I sent the users to LinkedIn. Chances are, once they're there, they're maybe look at my profile for 3 seconds and go, I'm on to the next scrolling thing.
Man, or if it's you, I would go to LinkedIn to check you out, Alex. And as soon as I went to LinkedIn, I would see I had a message or I'd see my notifications. I'd be gone.
That's it.
I forget why I ever went there to begin with.
I agree with you. And so same thing with Instagram and all these other channels that everyone is obsessed with. But when you get down with small, medium business and even Fortune 500 brands, you go ask them, what percentage of your sales comes from social? Well, like very little, unless you are an e-commerce player like Chewy or Amazon, right? So people are obsessed with social media, but at the end of the day, it's a lot of squeeze for very little juice there. So that's why I say the least amount of friction between you and your lead or your customer is the website and the email marketing. Obviously, the other question now becomes, well, then Alex, how do I drive traffic to my website? Well, this is where email and paid media comes in. You definitely have to do some paid advertising, but you have to be strategic because, as I mentioned, you're competing in most industries or verticals with big players. And so you could just keep spinning your wheel. You could spend $1,000 on Facebook ads in a day and get nothing. or Google ads and get nothing. So the SEO guy is going to convince you, nope, I know how we drive traffic. We spend a bunch of time creating a ton of content, and then you rank, and then people find you on page one, position zero. But then that doesn't happen, or it does happen, but only for a while. So again, it's quality over quantity. And don't obsess with the number of people that are going to your website. As long as it's the right people coming to your website, then it's your job. It becomes your job to make it a good experience, right? They shouldn't have to click 10 different buttons to get to your contact page or find your phone number. If they have to do that, then that's not going to generate leads for you.
All right. So lead generation, again, a lot of people, what I see in my industry, especially with people that are just getting started, they're trying to learn how to get past just being the individual lead generator, you know, like we're going to chamber meetings and all that stuff. They're trying to figure out how to create the system for it. Alex, what are the key components to that? Like if you're steering somebody from there, let's say the startup entrepreneur, where they're not just getting started, but they're within the first couple of years and they're still developing their systems. What are the things they need to focus on the most, like prioritize it? Because again, there are so many options out there for how you can spend your money to try to put yourself out there, and people just don't know. Yeah. So walk us through it. If I'm just getting started, again, past the being in like the solopreneur aspect of me just focused on doing whatever I can to personally generate leads, how do we navigate into developing a system that is going to generate leads for our company?
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. Look, you don't have to go spend a ton of money on like a system like ClickFunnels or HubSpot or any of these big ones. I mean, you could literally set up a landing page, a really nice landing page. When I say landing page, by the way, I don't mean your homepage. I mean, one of the key components to any lead gen campaign is going to be a landing page. So no navigation buttons. It's just your call to action, your header, maybe 200-300 words of text, a picture to tell the story, and the form. I need the form there. And this form has to capture first name, last name, email, phone number. And then most importantly, I got to have an irresistible offer. What am I giving you, the user? So even if I go to a trade show and come back and I gave out 500 business cards, and now people are going to that landing page because they're interested in that product or service. And then they say, great, well, I want to download your ebook, or I want to, you know, view your course, or I want to get your checklist or your templates. You have to be ready with some good content. Like you guys have the podcast, it's great content. You're putting a lot of time and there's a lot of value for people. So for you guys, it could be something as simple as like, look, I have a specific episode with this guest that solves that problem. Great. You're being of service to someone at no cost. And it's up to you whether you want to ask for an email or not. I have people that are like, oh, I don't like to do that because I don't do email newsletters. I said, listen, if you look at every big brand and even stores that you go to these days, when you're buying something, they immediately ask you for your email. I can't remember what store I was at the other day recently. Where was I? Mother's Day. So I went to that store, Sur La Table, with my mom, and it's like one of those chef's stores. So we're buying the thing, and I'm getting to the register, and they asked me for my phone number. I said, I don't want to give my phone number. And the lady said, well, can I have your email? Because then we'll give you a 10% discount. I'm like, man, do I need another email? All right, fine. I gave her the email because, hey, 10% is 10%, right? So you look at Fortune 500 companies, all of them are using this tactic, which is capturing your email, capturing your phone number, and then not selling you every step of the way. Over the next 6 to 12 months, I'm going to send you relevant information about what you said you're interested in, but I'm not going to sell you. The worst thing you can do, which I see guys do this, it's like email after email selling you and selling you and selling you. Or here's worse. Now, I know you guys have experienced this. Someone says, you know, download our ebook or checklist or guide or whatever, and we're going to tell you how to do X. And you're like, oh, I'm so excited. That's what I'm going to do Monday morning, is read this thing. And you download it, you start to read it, and you get to the end of it, and it's like dangling a carrot. You're like, I still don't know what I didn't learn enough.
$9.99, you can get the answer.
Yeah, exactly. And now
this is a page of why you need this and why this is important. And just click here and pay $9.99 and you get it. That drives me insane.
That's what I'm saying.
I get pissed.
That's horrible, man. I almost feel like it's like at the mall when I used to work at the mall, and you know how the they have the guy who gives you a little toothpick with the little, you know, Asian food?
Yeah.
It's like if
oh
I would
go. Oh, my God, that's so valuable. That works so well. Oh
right? And then if they just gave you the toothpick, you'd be like, wait, what?
Yeah, that's
right. Here's the toothpick. Here's
what
the toothpick.
Am I going to do
with the $2, I'll give you a piece of chicken on it.
That little freaking like.
Nah, so
piece of sweet and sour chicken.
You're done.
It's cost me like thousands of dollars of miserable meals.
You know, but yeah, like so for those,
I'm like two bites in. I'm like, this was a horrible idea. I knew it. I told myself last time I'd never do this again. I'm like a week and a toothpick later from doing it all over again. $9 and a really sucky rest of the day later.
And your time too. right, Chad? Your time.
Like, I need when to figure out how to put taxes on a toothpick. I'll stand outside and make a killing. How do we do that?
I don't think that's what Alex is going to teach you to do.
I like a dollar on the toothpick.
For your early generation.
Would you like a tax savings, sir? There's more where that came from.
Is there a write off the toothpicks?
I'm going to give out dollars on toothpicks at the next event. So, would you like a tax savings, sir? Can I interest you in a tax savings sample? Here's a dollar. There's thousands more where that came from. Come on in.
But that's what it is. People are lazy, though. People are lazy.
I don't know if you meant to go this route, but this is brilliant marketing. Like I'm on board. I'm getting all sorts of ideas.
This is an important moment in the history of the Stronger Business Podcast because I really believe I have no doubts here. That's the funniest thing Chad's ever said on the episode. Like that's the funniest thing.
I never offered to give away money before.
My head is kind of hurting from the laughter. You know, I got a little bit of pain from the brainstem. But because I don't think that's where you're going with it, but he's like, oh, yeah, I got a great idea. Dollar bills on a toothpick.
Not go there?
I don't think so.
He created a whole different metaphor for it.
You need to figure out how to put Lysol on a toothpick.
Here you go. There's some hand sanitizer on a toothpick. I don't think toothpick is the magic.
Can I interest you in some cleanliness, sir?
Oh, man. But you're right on, though, as far as in saying, like, if somebody makes an offer, hey, give me something that I value, which would be the ability to get in touch with you with your cell phone number or your email address. And I'm going to give you something of value, but then it's really not, again, it's just a toothpick. It's not something of value. Like that's a raw deal. And so you're saying, Alex, correct me if I'm wrong here, because I might've been tainted by Chad's awesome examples, but if I'm going to offer something of value, perceived value, then I need to back that up with actually giving something of true value to the person giving me their email address, giving me their cell phone number.
That's right. I need to actually eat that piece of chicken.
I need that dollar on the toothpick.
Oh man. Well, you know, like, so you guys get with real estate, like one business model that I don't like is timeshare. Okay. I think it's just
as an accountant's nightmare.
Yeah. It's a money pit. However, from a marketing standpoint, I love what timeshares do.
Their close rate's like 90%, I think.
They are good.
They get you in the room, you're done.
But they give you so much value that by the end of the pitch, whether you are or not are not going to do the deal, you definitely feel like, dude, if I could do the deal, if I could, I would, because you've given me so much value. Cruise ships do this, right? Cruise lines do this. All-inclusive vacations, they do this. They say, look, you pay X and you get all of this, and you actually get all of this. But I think in business, so many of us with these like YouTuber dudes who are always selling something, and they got a Lamborghini in the background and whatever. It's like, man, that's all like smoke and mirrors. Like if you're going to tell me to invest an hour of my time to absorb your content, please make it valuable, man, or make it entertaining. At least like we have a good laugh. We learn a little something. And there's balance there, but to just simply imagine if this whole podcast, we just kept going on about lead gen, but I actually never gave a single tip, actionable tip, like a real actionable tip. I mean, forget it.
Yeah. So let's take the timeshare model of you really feel the value of what all you're getting by the end of their pitch. Mm. How does a business replicate that with a potential customer? How do you provide so much value? Like they're like, man, how do I not go for this?
Yeah. So I would start with competitive research. I often ask business owners, like, who are your biggest competitors? They say, blah, blah, blah. I go, what's their sales cycle? What's their customer journey? They say, I don't know. I said, well, you need to immediately go secret shop your competitor. understand what your top competitors are offering. What kind of lingo are they passing the person off, that prospect or lead, to, through 1, 2, 3, 4 intake people? Like, paint the whole process and then look at your process, and you're probably going to be like, oh crap, mine is not so hot. No wonder I lose so many deals to the competitor. And then go a step further and talk to your clients. We do this all the time. We say, look, with lead gen, reporting is a big piece of what we do. Reporting, you know, these boring reports that are long and tell you exactly what's working, what's not. But we often ask our clients, like, look, do you want to get a static report like a PDF? Do you want a presentation? Do you want it in video format? Do you want it in audio? Would you like us to come in and sit with your team and explain the top KPIs? Like, what do you want us to do? Because I know what we want to do, but I don't know if that's what's best for you. And wow, lo and behold, everybody comes back and tells you something different. So you kind of customize that experience to be able to give each customer what they want. And I especially in business.
Yeah, but all right, now I need some clarity there. Because for me as a business owner trying to scale, that sounds like a horrible model. If I start customizing
and
the customers everything they want, then I start spending enormous amounts of time catering and not building a scalable model.
Mm-hmm. Well, some of the things are, I love that you're pushing back on that. And I agree. When you're small, you can't go cater to everyone. But what you can do are simple things. For example, I have clients that still pay our agency Predict with a check. Man, I wish they didn't pay with the check. With the check. And got, what are you going to say, $250,000 a year customer? Am I going to turn to them and say, look, my process is, you see this little Stripe link every month? You can either ACH it, wire it, or pay a credit card. That's how we do it. You don't like it? No. Now, if it's a $25 a year customer, absolutely, you forget about it. So I think you have to give it some context.
Some intuitiveness about it. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
As you're saying that too, you're not talking about having unlimited options. Like every time you talk to a customer, you're saying, tell me how you want me to give it and I'll give you it to that way. It's like, no, hey, it's multiple choice. Like,
it's
want A, B, C, or D.
Yeah, it's Chipotle or Chick-fil-A style. You know, I've got like 8 variations of the model, but if you ask me for this sauce or that sauce, if you ask me for black beans or brown beans, it's slight little things. So you're not creating this like crazy system that is going to take a whole team. Oh, by the way, most of these systems are automated. You know, applications like Zapier. I don't know if your audience is familiar with Zapier. Some people call it Zapier, but it's Zapier. Integrates like every tool, whether you have Constant Contact or Facebook or Zoho, Salesforce, like all the different systems that you use, from QuickBooks to Gmail, every digital tool that you use, from your apps to your business suite of tools, you can integrate all those things. And much of this happens automated. I mean, the automations has eliminated millions of jobs already. And it takes a little setup because you need a good IT guy to connect all these pieces. But once it's connected, man, it's done.
I like what you're saying there too, Alex, is I think about there's a podcast that I really like, but they only put it on YouTube. So it's, they don't always post to actual, you know, Audible podcast player. And so for me, I'm like, I don't listen to it, even though I love the content, I love the value I get from it. Because it requires me being 100% dedicated to it on my phone if I'm listening to it, right? I can't listen to it and also text someone.
I'm with you.
It just goes off of YouTube. So for me, if it's like, hey, we got to
automate just replicating it on Spotify or iTunes,
which in that situation is easy. It's they already have the audio content created,
customized for their time. It's just customized.
So it's not difficult. It used to be the big thing with everything online was like a white paper. Everything was a white paper. And I'm like, I really don't want to have to take the time to read it myself. I would like for someone to read it to me, like while I'm doing something else, because I'm busy, right? Like startup entrepreneur, I got things going on. And so I like that but some people really want the white paper because they want to be able to unplug everything else and just read it. You know, maybe they want to read it on the plane or something like that. So I love the idea of being able to have a couple of different formats because people learn and consume data or content differently. So why not have the same content distributed 3 or 4 different ways?
Well, anyway, I'll give you a great example that happened to me last summer. So last summer we went on vacation, we came back and the water heater had crapped out. Yay, that's lovely. No way, man. And I wanted to get the tankless, but it wasn't going to work because you needed a permit. It was going to take too long. Long story short, I went to Lowe's and I called 3 contractors. Two contractors took way too long. So then I called two more. So now I'm up to like five different people to get quotes. Make a long story short, only one contractor who's been around for like 40 years in this area, only one was willing. Now, I came back that week. I was busy with work and the kids and homeschool. Only one contractor was willing to do the whole deal, start to finish, via text. Everyone else that I try to text with, because my wife was busy with the kids, I'm busy with work, I'm just trying to, in between meetings, just text with them and say, like, can I just send you a picture of the heater and you look at what it is and how many BTUs and blah, blah, blah. Nope. It was like, no. One small company that's been around for a long time said, yeah, absolutely. You send us a picture. We don't even have to come out and see it. We know what you need. As long as you agree on the price, we show up, we install it. You're happy. Everybody's happy. Even Lowe's didn't want to do that. Well, they did that. Guess what? They sent me the payment link via text. I paid for the deposit. They showed up. They installed it. It was seamless. And that's it. And I said, I got to ask you a question from a marketing standpoint. I said, because I noticed on your website, there's no like payment link or like dashboard. Do you guys typically do installs like this just via text? She said, no, we had never done it. But the owner is the one who was like, listen, why not? We've had more people asking to just communicate with us via direct messages. We said, why not? You're our guinea pig. And it went very well. We did the e-signature right off of a link that came via text. That's a perfect example of a mom and pop business saying, look, we've never done that, but we're going to just take that process one step further. And God knows, maybe they've increased their business by 10, 20%. I don't know, but they were willing to do it, you know?
Yeah. And they may have found out again, like you just said, you talked about earlier about being able to go check out and see what your competitors are doing. Not saying these guys did that, but you're like, nobody was willing to just text with me. So there's an avenue. They made money off of you being a customer for them because you were, they were willing to create convenience for you. And that's an angle that maybe other people aren't doing. So who knows if they just go, hey, that worked pretty good, right? Like we interacted with the customer through text messages. That was very efficient for us. Made it happen. Let's open up to that. And it creates not a new revenue stream, but it creates maybe a broader gate for people to come in where somebody else wouldn't allow it. They'll allow it. And so therefore they're going to make more money, which I love.
So how do you, all right, from a business standpoint, how do you make sure if you're having multiple lead gen opportunities or you're texting or some people's coming in through Facebook Messenger or some people's emailing, some people's calling or coming in the door from a business, once you are lead genning and the customer is showing up in all these different platforms, how do you keep from screwing that up? And how do most businesses go wrong there from a standpoint of, I've got the customer now, how do I not screw this up?
Yeah, I'm going to draw a line from there to the CFO, which you're going to like, Chad, because typically
draw away. If you can draw this on a spreadsheet, it's even better.
That's right. Because the truth is the CFO, or if you have a good, you know, if you're a small business, you got a bookkeeper and a CPA, that's fine too. Not everybody needs a fractional CMO or a full-time CMO or CFO, I should say. But me as the marketing guy, I got to convince the CFO that what we're going to do makes sense for you, that you're going to have return on marketing spend. That's not return on advertising spend or any of the other acronyms that you hear on, you know, these advertising platforms. The key is return on marketing spend.
Yes, that is, if you're just thinking, Jesus, Alex just wants to see himself on video on Facebook. Why aren't we wasting money on this?
It's true. And you, Chad, you're coming in as the CFO and you're like, listen, where's the money? If we put $100,000 into this campaign, this marketing lead gen system, when is the break-even point? Because I'm going to go ahead and create a line item for this new like expense block over here. But how do we make money from it? Because you know how to make money when you hire a new person. You know what that employee yields for you. Well, what about that marketing spend? And very often, Chad, that doesn't happen. So the marketing firm, they're talking, here's how you do ads, here's how we drive traffic and do SEO. I don't know anything about your sales. I don't know anything about increasing customer engagement and retention and lifetime value. I'm going to say right here that your marketing agency or even your marketing person, those companies who are listening and have a marketing person in-house, they need to be able to draw that line between, you know, marketing, sales, customer service, all the way through to the bottom line and say, this is exactly what the return on marketing spend is. And if you do that, then clearly you'll know if it's working or not. So going back to your question about the customer experience and how do you elevate that, what's different for every business? And I would just go back to the competitive research, right? But also doing your own due diligence, talking to your customers and taking into consideration. And I think back to what you said, Chad, it's true. You're not going to implement everything that every customer tells you, oh, I would love this and I love that. Maybe you implement, you know, 3 out of 10 things that you found in your survey, in your research, right? And maybe 1 or 2 that your competitors are doing, you make it better. But at the end of the day, what matters to you as an entrepreneur, as a business owner, is like, what if I put all this time, because it's the time too and money. Here's the thing that people don't think about. If I start generating more leads for you, so let's say you spent $100,000 this year, and all of a sudden I drove you tens and thousands of leads. You're like, that's great, Alex. Look, you got a bunch of leads. And we turn them into sales. But the question also becomes, how much time is your team spending to qualify and convert those leads? Because maybe you were lucky to close some deals that made the marketing effort sound good. But maybe if you go calculate, maybe your team ended up spending thousands of hours chasing crappy leads too. So you got to bake that into the marketing spend, which often marketing people won't do. They're like, that's not my problem. No, it is your problem. You need to talk to have the sales team, the customer service, customer experience team in the room so you guys can all have that same conversation. And it really comes from the CFO and the COO and the CEO. Those questions are pertinent.
And from the, let's say, the solopreneur or the really startup entrepreneur standpoint, I think the hard thing is those roles and hats still have to be worn. You've got to be sitting there with the marketing firm you've hired, and you on your own have got to be the sales team, the CFO, and the customer experience team, and cycle through each of those decisions. And I think that's where what I see entrepreneurs or solopreneurs really screw this up so much. Like, oh, I hired a good marketing firm. I trust them. They got it. I don't know marketing. They're not putting on the hat of, let me evaluate this as the CFO. Let me evaluate this and be in communication as the customer experience person in my business. And I think a lot of people are, I'm not big enough. That doesn't matter. I'm not big enough. I don't have a sales team. Actually, you do. You're the sales team. You're the CFO, you're the customer experience person. And so you've got to, I think, wear those hats and play those roles regardless of size. I don't know if you feel that way, but that's
like right on, man. That's such a good point that you're making, Chad, because if you look at why companies fail, according to the SBA, you know, what is it? Close to 80% of companies fail.
I think, yeah.
Fail within 5 years, whatever it is, 7 years. It's different for different areas of the country. But at the end of the day, the one thing that survey shows year after year after year over the last 30 years is that the number one reason businesses fail is lack of market fit. That means your product or service does not fit in the market. Now, you can go deep into it and understand, well, maybe it's not that there's no demand. It's that it's saturated. There's too many competitors. My pricing is not competitive enough. But at the end of the day, it's not finance. It's not people, lack of talent. It's product market fit. And so why is that important? For the entrepreneurs listening to the Stronger Business Podcast today who are going like, look, I'm going to jump off of my 9-to-5 and I'm just going to go right into starting this business. No, don't do that yet. Like, start to build it as a side hustle and see if the market penetration is there. See if all those processes that you know nothing about or maybe know a little bit about, if those are going to work after a year. And then you can probably come to a conclusion very quickly that, oh man, actually this idea that I had, not so hot. Here I am 6 months into it. I've reached out to dozens of people. I've done pitches. I haven't generated a single dollar. So I mean, entrepreneurship is great. I'm always going to recommend that people go down that road. I love the ups and the downs, but you have to really understand if your product is something that people actually want. And if you think it's great, that's nice. But do people think it's great? MIT and all these other universities, they do typically do a study where before you launch a business, you should go out and talk to at least 75 to 100 respondents who can give you feedback for the product or service.
Nobody does that. Nobody does.
Nobody does that.
And nobody does it. And look at the odds, that 83% failure rate. And I said, hey, let's all go to Vegas. They got this awesome game. It's whatever. It's roulette. We got a 17% chance of winning. Let's all put $100 on it. Much less, let me quit my job and my life and put everything on this 17% chance of winning. Or let's all go climb Everest.
Yeah.
There's a 17% chance of not dying. This sounds amazing. It's like so much is stacked against you, but people don't go out and ask 75 or 100 people, or people don't side gig it like we're huge believers of, or want to do the work of wearing the different hats. I think it's an awesome point.
There's one thing too. We really like a book, Alex, called The 12-Week Year by Brian Moran. And there's a chapter editor. He talks about interest versus commitment. So he's like, are you interested in this idea? Or are you committed to this idea? And I think that a lot of times that people have an idea for a business and they're like, oh yeah, let's get started. This is going to be amazing. And then 6 months or 9 months in, it's really hard. And they realize at that point, hey, I wasn't really committed to this. I was interested in it. I got excited about it. I got started and I'm failing. And like, I don't really want to do this anymore. It's because they just, again, like they could have probably figured that out on the beginning. You know, with just doing some proper due diligence. And again, almost all of us messed this up. But for the listener, you're getting in some counsel here from three entrepreneurs with decades of experience saying, hey, vet your idea. You're going to be excited about it. You're going to be biased toward what you think. Like, you're going to think it's going to be easier and more successful than it's probably going to be. And so you need to go out and ask some people that
be successful and you not even like it.
Yeah.
Like, right. I don't even want to do you may get this. This is end. Working.
I'm wildly successful. The business is growing. I hate every minute.
I've been there.
We've all been there.
Probably. I've had an awesome business that I hate. It sucked.
But it is interesting to try to figure out, is this something that I can be committed to? And as you're executing and making it happen. Now, pivoting a little bit here, because I love this. As all entrepreneurs do, we feel like there's more time in the day than there actually is. And we have lots of things that we're interested in. And I was really interested in talking in this podcast episode about side gigging and should entrepreneurs do it, but we're out of time. So we're, Alex,
we're going to have to come back for it
to have that discussion, man, because for real. And by the way, I can't figure out who it is, Alex, but you got a doppelganger. It's some actor. Who is it? Do you know who it is?
Usually, where's my hat? I don't have my hat here. Usually, if I have my fedora, they'll say it's Bruno Mars, but I'm taller than him.
It's the dude from, God, I watch too much of my wife's TV.
I can see Bruno Mars.
I'm embarrassed to say
I feel like this,
it's a
TV drama. It's like a detective type show.
Yeah, it's Miss Congeniality. He's also on Law and Order. That guy. Who's that guy?
I know who you're talking about.
You know what I'm talking about?
I'm a Law and Order fan, and I don't know his name.
You got to figure out.
Well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to, whenever we end this episode, we still got a lot to talk about. Like, we got into the side gig and you own multiple businesses for some crazy reason. I don't even know how many I own. I don't even want to start unpacking that mess. Josh has got all sorts of stuff. He's got like four titles and nicknames, like 9 Instagram accounts.
But I've been quitting stuff.
I don't even know. You keep accumulating. You say that all the time. You barely quit anything.
It's a new thing.
That's a whole other thing. But seriously, as soon as we end this episode, we're going to have our team send out an invite for the next episode because we got a lot more to talk about.
And on
that episode, we're going to look up who the Law and Order Miss Congeniality guy is. And we're just going to like advertise that and call you that the whole episode. So this is the last episode with Alex, but the next one, we're going to have an awesome celebrity join us.
Amazing.
It's going to blow up the Sterner Business Podcast.
Yeah, it's going to be so cool.
Marketing, Alex, marketing. We're going to have a celebrity on the podcast and I'm going to give dollars on toothpicks. So that's my two takeaways from today's episode.
And we learned it here on this episode because Alex said, he lied about his age to get a credit card. So we'll lie about the guest.
Oh man, that's some clickbait right there. You'll get a lot of traffic. I'm telling you.
Oh, what's the name?
Benjamin Brad.
Benjamin Brad. Oh, BB. Welcome to the podcast, BB.
Benjamin Brad. That's legit. Have you heard that before?
I have not heard that one before.
All right, you got to Google it, man.
I get different ones.
It's there, man. The whole time I was like, this guy, I feel like he's
I feel like he's investigating me right now.
That's all right, Josh, land this plane.
All right.
In another direction.
You're gonna pile, yeah, you will jump all over this. So as we said earlier, Alex, with each Stronger Business podcast episode, we like to land the plane with our max out moment, because it's all about getting stronger.
People land planes in gyms. This is all like connects and relates.
That's it's exactly right. There's a runway going through. No, it's a max out moment. Again, it is all about getting stronger, right? And so if there was only one thing that you could say to the Stronger Business Podcast listener about this episode or whatever it is you want to share, whatever you or whatever you feel like Benjamin Bratt would want to share, whatever it is, it's the max out moment. It's your one opportunity to say, if you didn't hear anything else, hear this. What is your max out moment?
If you didn't hear anything else, you know, like me lying about my age or calling my mom to bail me out, that those sorts of things, those were embarrassing, but good lessons, good life lessons. No, if you didn't hear anything else, I typically will say focus, but I'm not going to say focus, because just like when we talked about earlier, we want to give your audience a very different type of content. And, you know, all of us as entrepreneurs, we have different sort of philosophies that we live by. Another one that I live by, and I often don't talk about it, I think is hunger. Whatever it is that I'm doing, I'm telling you, man, I know when I'm not hungry for it. I know my wife will say every time between the garage and the car, you come up with a new business venture. Like literally, I'm like, ooh, guess what? And then she's like, what? And I'm like, oh, and then like, you know, drive a little bit. And I'm like, oh, that's a stupid idea. I'm like speech to texting on my phone, this new great idea, not staying focused. But what I've come to understand is that when I don't have that like innate, like natural hunger that I can't stop thinking about it every day, that's when I know, man. And that's when I know I'm going to follow through, whether it's 6 months, a year, 2 years, 3 years. And I'm going to, you know, go through the highs and the lows and do my homework and be able to do it 7 days a week if I need to. So listen, you know, if you have that hunger, and if you don't have that hunger, then maybe you haven't found that thing yet.
Mm. Oh, that's great advice.
Yeah, I love that.
Because there's not hunger, that's your first level of due diligence of should you pursue this or should you consider this idea or side gig or business.
Yeah. I mean, that's good, man, because there's no shame in making a pivot if you don't have the hunger for what you're doing.
Yeah,
So true.
If you quit, you just quit, like you don't start something next, there's a problem. But man, trying to figure out what it is, most of it, you said earlier, you're like, hey, I got three successes and hundreds of failures. And I think for most of us as successful entrepreneurs, we almost all have that story, because the only way to truly get to a high level of success is you got to go through the failure. So, man, I love that, dude. Find the hunger and chase it down. That's awesome. That's one of our best, I think, max out moments. It is. That's a great plane landing moment right there.
hungry for the chicken off the toothpick.
I could
not agree. There's lots of references to hunger throughout this whole episode. I'm going to get people hungry for money and tax saving. Just like, God.
Alex, for our listener, man, number one
I'm
place.
I'm so much better of a marketer after this podcast. That's I can't right. even describe like the changes.
Maybe you should drink your coffee from the layman's mug more often. Alex, where's the best place for the listener to find you post podcast?
Oh yeah. So my home address is no, I'm not gonna give you my home address.
You're like Bennigan's on the corner of First and Broad.
Go to IDMB. Ain't that what it's called?
No, I'm gonna go send them to Benjamin Bratt's house. No, they could go to my website, man, dadpreneur.co. I'd send them to predict.io, but that's the company. Come to dadpreneur.co. You know everything that I'm involved in. I got a lot of free resources that I like to share with anybody who's interested in growing their business, man. So dadpreneur.co.
Awesome, man. Well, it's been a lot of fun. We're going to do this again soon. Thank you for joining us today. Tell Sandra Bullock we said hello.
Thanks again, Josh. Thanks again, Chad. Appreciate it.
All right, until next time, grow stronger, friends.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Stronger Business Podcast, be sure to leave us a review and share it with a friend. You can find us online to connect at strongerbusiness.com or on Instagram and Facebook at Stronger Business. We look forward to hearing from you, and we'll see you at the summit.